You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's World Ocean Day, and to celebrate, I thought it would be interesting to deep dive into the vast and wonderful world of the ocean and hear about the efforts undertaken to survey it and the environmental impacts. I spoke to Associate Professor Travis Horton about his research efforts using satellite imaging. The ocean canvasses over 70% of our planet, but we are still yet to fully understand it. Could we begin by discussing what sparked your interest in understanding the ocean and ocean health?
I grew up on the ocean up in New England, so I'm from America originally, but moving over to Aotearoa, New Zealand in 2007 brought the ocean and our position so close to this vast expanse that much more to the fore. So I had the opportunity then to just start doing a novel research around new technology and doing it in such a way that it has impact for improving ocean health. There's really a long connection to the ocean from a personal level, but also my journey, my own migration here to Aotearoa that really reinforced it for me.
The focal point of your research has been on the vital signs of endangered Pikia humpback whales. What technologies has you and your team utilized during your research in this effort?
Yeah, so one of the many things that we don't know about the ocean and organisms that live in the ocean is, you know, how healthy are they? This is particularly true for even some of the biggest organisms out there, the baleen whales. And the ocean being such a massive space and baleen whales migrating all over the place, being pretty far away from the coast in most places, it's really, really hard to get a measure of how healthy a population is or even how healthy an individual is. So at our team, we basically applied a technique that had been developed on people where you use an infrared camera to measure the very subtle changes within skin temperature. We put an infrared camera on a drone and then flew from shore, so no boats were in the water, and hovered 40-ish meters above humpback whales off of Rarotonga. And we were able to take that data back to the lab, analyze it, and work out the respiration rate, the body temperature, and the heartbeat, which are three of the four vital signs. So we're getting quantitative measures of whales' health and whales' condition from a non-invasive novel technology. It was really just an awesome way to monitor the health of the ocean and the organisms that live within it.
And what has the funding process been like?
It's a struggle. The ocean tends to be, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Even in countries like Aotearoa, there's just not really too much or enough funding that goes into ocean research, whether it be for understanding the potential impacts of deep sea mining or the condition of the ocean in the context of climate change or the recovery of endangered organisms like whales, the ability to go out and collect food from indigenous customary fisheries. There's heaps of things that require resource, and it's a real challenge to get funding. So for us, we do it on a shoestring, basically. The University of Canterbury does everything it can to support capital equipment purchases, and it does an absolutely spectacular job of buying drones and infrared cameras. Then I need to be able to get out there and deploy them, so apply to just about every organization possible, and every now and then you get a few thousand dollars, and that'll pay for a plane ticket or, you know, a week or so accommodation and food just to get the data you need. And then that data can last for quite some time. So in my opinion, you know, that funding space, in order to monitor the ocean appropriately, it needs to be dramatically increased.
The United Nations Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development philosophy is that the science we need for the ocean we want. How has this philosophy informed the direction of your research, and how crucial has the organization been in your efforts?
Yeah, the International Decade for Sustainable Ocean Development, the 2021 to 2030 UN Decade of Ocean Science, it's just perfect timing. Because globally, what we're seeing are the impacts of climate change. We're seeing all kinds of issues in and around the ocean. And it's more serendipity than anything. I started doing a lot of this research back in 2006, 2007. So I just happened to be fortunate enough to have 10 plus years of research development that coincide with the decade of ocean science. And, you know, the science we need for the ocean we want, a large part of that is basically monitoring, using novel technologies like drones and satellite to get data from hard to get to places. The ocean is that huge, expansive place. The organisms that live within it move around all over the place. There's the depth aspect, lots of pressure from potential deep sea mining developments, etc. The science we need for the ocean we want is a crucial message and mantra that I hope many people embrace, and I'm committed to it, something I'll keep doing for the rest of my career.
Ocean acidification is an issue that you have highlighted as a potential threat for corals and whales in the ocean ecosystem. How have you and the UN Decade of Ocean Science worked to alleviate this and other potential threats that have arisen?
Yeah, so ocean acidification is crucially important and problematic process that happens in the ocean. Basically, humanity is emitting more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and that increases what we call the partial pressure of CO2 within the atmosphere, and that basically forces CO2 to dissolve into water. And when CO2 plus H2O, when CO2 dissolves into water, it makes carbonic acid, decreases the ocean's pH. So the oceans are acidifying due to the CO2 emissions. That has made corals, which are animals, some of the most endangered organisms on the planet. The risk of extinction for corals is absolutely massive. It's been increasing dramatically over the last few decades. One of the projections I've seen is that oceans will have acidified to the point that corals will no longer be stable by before the end of this century. So this is a massive issue that requires action today. It's linked to the drivers of climate change, but ultimately less CO2 needs to go into the air. Now that aligns up with the research we do around whales, because there's lots of good research around this thing called the whale pump, which is more or less that the more whales there are, the more plankton there is, and the more plankton there is, the more CO2 the ocean takes up in organic matter, not as acid. What happens there is the whales are mixing the ocean, they're eating in one place and then moving somewhere else, and then excreting iron and nitrogen, some of the limiting nutrients for ocean ecosystems, and that drives phytoplankton blooms, which pull CO2 out of the atmosphere, stored away into the tissues of the phytoplankton, and when those phytoplankton die, they settle down in the bottom of the ocean and just store away the carbon for millennia down in the bottom of the ocean. The other positive of all that, to be honest, is that phytoplankton also make the oxygen we breathe. So every other breath you take, the oxygen in that air was made by phytoplankton in the ocean. So the acidification and the risks not only to corals, but whole ocean ecosystems is one of the most important challenges humanity faces, in my opinion.
What future projects are on the horizon for you and your team?
Yeah, one of the low-hanging fruit for us really right now is further development of new techniques to monitor ocean health. So we're not just using infrared cameras. We're now using multispectral cameras and satellites that do what are called hyperspectral imaging. We can generate 3D models of ocean ecosystems. But in addition to just getting the 3D geometry of the ocean ecosystem, we can use all those data to get a quantitative measure of the health. So if a coral reef has a major bleaching event, you can potentially use satellites and drones to get the data to map out where the bleaching was most severe, where the bleaching was somewhere kind of less severe, and then other areas that made it through. And through that data, you can get an understanding of how the ecosystems are responding to significant events. And then from there, you could develop targets for reseeding coral reefs. You can actually go in and do effectively a planting of live corals from one place and planting them into a new place to help the corals recover. But ultimately, a lot of these things, they need to be upscaled. And to me, there's a massive contribution for the education sector here, particularly within the Pacific context, where Pacific Island nations might not have the capability and capacity now, but they've got the interest and the sovereignty to make their own decisions. So, one thing that New Zealand universities and New Zealand academics can do is we can help build the capability and the capacity. We can kind of lead the way by creating the new technique, the new technology, and then train locals across the Pacific to be able to do the monitoring they need to get the data that they need to get the ocean that they want. So that's kind of the way forward for me.
Finally, I just want to ask, with today being World Ocean Day, I just wanted to ask, also with the petition to ban sea mining being handed in to government to be assessed, what more needs to be done for protecting our oceans going forward?
Yeah, so, it is World Oceans Day today. It's a fantastic opportunity for everybody to just acknowledge and recognize the oceans and thank the oceans for all that it is a system that does for us as humanity. And the issue of sea mining, the thing that I think all parties would agree to on that, or all perspectives would agree to, is that we need more information. It's a whole new frontier, whether you're talking about cobalt crust on seamounts or polymetallic nodules on the deep ocean floor or massive sulfides like over in Papua New Guinea or iron sands in the relatively shallow environments of the continental shelf. Those different type of mineral deposits need to be studied to understand what the risks are. What are the potential impacts on the ecosystems? So it's not necessarily correct to just dive right in and have a go without that knowledge. And it's not necessarily right to say that the deep sea mining would completely devastate the ocean. We simply don't know. So that the first step is to move slowly and cautiously, gather the information you need, and then make informed decisions. So yeah, World Oceans Day, the message I would send out to everybody out there is that oceans are awesome, but they're at risk. So we need to gather information because they're so vast. There's so much we don't know about the oceans that crucial information can help us make better decisions in the future and live more sustainably.
That was University of Canterbury Associate Professor Travis Hawthorne speaking to me about the use of satellite technology for imaging the ocean.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.